Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of global mining projects. And to do that, we're joined by the CEO of Trident Royalties, Adam Davidson. Adam, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as I mentioned there, we're going to be discussing a number of mining projects around the world, but we're going to be doing it from a slightly different angle that listeners are familiar with, because Trident Royalties is a London-listed mining company, and mining investment company, but they specialise, Adam, in streaming and royalties, so slightly different to what people may be used to in explorers, people are looking at the operational side of things. So before we get into your portfolio and, the ins and outs of Trident Royalties, Adam, would you be able to give us some information and a bit of a background to people that aren't familiar with mining royalties and how they work?
Yeah, sure. So I think the key thing you touched on there was we're a mining investment company in the sense that we're not out there acquiring mining projects and looking to put them into production or to operate them ourselves. Rather, we're acquiring royalties and streams over mining projects such that we get exposure to them. And the nature of that exposure is slightly different than what people may be used to in terms of investing in mining equities. And I would argue that it's a better style of exposure. Particularly, royalties give us a percentage of revenue from the underlying operations. So the critical difference there is that we get a percentage of the revenue they're generating, whereas equities exposure is a percentage of their profit. So they're exposed to cost because profit is obviously revenue minus the cost of the operation. So it's really highlighted in the environment we're in today, where inflation is sort of running rampant. You're seeing that reflected in real assets. So metals prices are going up pretty significantly. But also wages and the cost of diesel for mine sites and all that sort of operating cost and capital cost, we're seeing that reflected in miners' bottom lines as well. So, but whereas a royalty, you're just getting exposure to that top line. So metals prices go on a tear. All things being equal, if they're producing the same amount of metal, you'll see that reflected in the royalty revenue. Whereas equities, obviously, they're seeing it reflected in the fact that metals prices have gone on upward movement, but the fact that operating costs are also moving upwards means that they're not getting quite the same style of uplift. So it's a very defensive style of exposure relative to mining equities, and in some respects, almost a derivative style of exposure. But you're doing so from an instrument that sort of sits at the top of the capital structure with regards to who gets paid first and that sort of stuff. So a very, very different style and higher quality style of cash flow.
Thank you, Adam. So we're going to go into some of the projects that you're working on with your royalties. But before we do that, just to give people a little bit more insight into the structure of a royalty and how it works. So from my understanding, there's different types of royalty. It can obviously be done on the production of the mine, amongst other things. So would you have to just give us a bit of context into the different variations of mining royalties that are out there and maybe that Trident have in the portfolio?
Yeah, you can get pretty cute with the structures, and we've got all kinds of varying structures where some have minimum payments on a quarterly basis. Some of the royalty rate steps down once you've recovered a certain amount of capital, but at the end of the day, they're all effectively just a percentage of revenue. So they range by and large from anywhere from 0.25% of revenue up to circa 2% is a typical royalty range. A mine can sort of sustain that expense. And it's as simple as if they generate $100 of revenue, then and you've got a 1% royalty, you get that a dollar of that revenue. So that is really the style of exposure that I guess I was talking to, because if your equity and the operation generates $100 of revenue, but then they've got whatever $75 worth of costs, then your exposure is sort of slightly different, and particularly in sort of an upward price environment.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Adam, I mean, Trident, one of the first, if not the first, mining royalty company to list in London. But from my understanding, there is, you know, a more substantial offering of mining companies listed in Canada, for example. I mean, what sets Trident apart from, you know, other listed companies, maybe here in London and those that are listed, you know, overseas, possibly in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, you really touched on it. So the majority of our peers, you know, there's over 20 mining royalty companies at this point, and all but one or two are listed on the TSX, the Toronto Stock Exchange. And it really goes back to the inception of the royalty model as a form of financing in the mining industry. It was born in North America and born by and large in precious metals to help fund gold projects. You know, the miners would raise some equity, raise some debt, and the royalty kind of slots in there nicely. It's covenant light relative to debt. There's no fixed repayment schedule. And relative to equity, they don't have to go out there and issue their equity. So it's non-dilutive. So it's become an increasing part of the mining finance landscape. That said, it still is, you know, of the circa $70 billion in global mining royalty company market cap, you know, by and large, you'd have over $65 billion of that listed in Toronto. So that's the big differentiator is we're obviously listed in London. We've got a more global mandate relative to most of our peers who prioritize North America. And then most significantly, we're looking to build a portfolio that's got broad, diversified exposure to the entirety of the sector. So if an investor says, I want to get exposure to mining commodities, you know, as an inflation hedge or just to have a piece in their portfolio, the idea is that they can buy into Trident and from a royalty perspective, get exposure to the entirety of the sector. So everything from copper to gold to nickel to zinc. And we haven't been listed yet 2 years, so we're making good progress on building out the portfolio to give that broad diversified exposure. But that's our objective, and most of our peers are gold focused. So between the geography and the commodity focus, those are our two real big differentiators. And they've given us quite an edge because, you know, I think testament to the deals that we've drummed up and that people can review, these sorts of opportunities are sort of still out there to be uncovered, whereas in the purely gold space, it is much more competitive.
So followers of, you know, the metals and mining industry will be aware of the price movements that we've seen in certain commodities since the beginning of the tragedy that's unfolding in Ukraine. And you alluded to at the beginning, Adam, you know, to the benefits of higher metals prices on your royalty. So how has the conflict in Ukraine impacted Trident as a business?
I suppose it hasn't impacted us directly because we don't have any assets in Europe or Asia at the moment. So no sort of direct impact in that sense. That said, obviously, it's, you know, for all the wrong reasons, it's having an impact on inflation and commodity prices in general. So we're seeing, you know, upward movement off the back of that, and we do have exposure to that, given the portfolio that we've constructed thus far. We're exposed to that upward movement in commodity prices. So yeah, as I said, sort of for all the wrong reasons, don't hate to see it sort of on that basis, but we do have sort of tangential exposure, I suppose, in that sense.
So Adam, we're going to go and discuss a number of your projects in some detail. But you know, just as a note for listeners, there will be a link in the notes to this podcast to go through to the Trident Royalties website for more information, where you will find a breakdown of the portfolio of royalties that Trident holds. So Adam, would you be able to give us, you know, just sort of looking there, there's 20 plus royalties within there, but there's a very clear categorization there of the royalties between production, advanced and exploration. People familiar with mining, that will make sense. But, you know, for those people that aren't and sort of looking at, you know, your portfolio, would you be able to give us, you know, a breakdown of the different stages that your royalties are at and also speak to your diversification in regards to the geographical breakdown of the portfolio as well as the metals that are involved in your royalties?
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the big differentiators in terms of investors looking at getting exposure to mining commodities. Relative to other juniors, a junior miner may have one or two projects that they're advancing or maybe one project that's in production. Whereas a royalty company, we've got a $200 million US dollar market cap. And yet, as you said, we've got over 20 assets, and over 50% of our assets are cash flowing and generating revenue today. So it's a different model in that sense, and that it is so diversified, and that you can do, you can get this extreme level of diversification in a junior company, which is really impossible to do for miners. So, you know, from an investor perspective, they can either invest in the big boys, you know, Rio Tinto or BHP, to get sort of broad diversification, or they invest in juniors to hopefully get more capital growth. But then they've got to feel comfortable picking which junior miner they think is going to have accelerated growth. A royalty company is a nice bridge between the two, and that, you know, we can still, as testament to our share price, we can still have great capital growth, but we're doing so from a much broad, much more broadly diversified portfolio. So, you know, we've got assets everywhere from Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Peru, Brazil, a few in Africa, and then quite a bit in Australia. So very geographically broadly diversified. And then commodity-wise, you know, I mentioned we listed in mid-2020, so not yet 2 years old. When we listed, we just had one paying iron ore royalty, and then we've obviously built that out to plus 20 assets and spanning iron ore, gold, copper, and most significantly in our portfolio is exposure to lithium, sort of a key battery metal. And obviously looking to continue to build on that and broaden our diversification, both with regards to assets and commodities. But that's really the key overview is we've got a broadly diversified portfolio that spans a number of commodities and jurisdictions. So it's a sort of relative to a junior miner, a risk mitigated approach, I suppose.
So Adam, you mentioned there lithium, and that's a particularly interesting commodity at the moment, of course, with the growing demand for EVs, we're seeing the price of lithium soaring, which, you know, given what you've just said there, one would expect is producing some benefits for Trident Royalties. And we're going to drill down into one particular project now, Adam, and that's the Thacker Pass lithium deposit in Nevada. You know, given the backdrop of what's happening in lithium, I mean, where does this sit within your portfolio, and how excited are you about, you know, where this goes? And maybe give us a bit of detail, if you could please, about, you know, where that is and where that fits in terms of, you know, is it generating revenue yet, how far away that could be?
Yeah, so that on a NAV per share basis, Thacker Pass is our biggest exposure in our portfolio, and we're happy for it to be so, to be honest. It's a tier one of the most globally significant lithium assets in the world, and is located in the U.S. So a good jurisdiction that at the moment has rapidly increasing lithium demand and effectively almost no lithium domestic production. And it's now considered a sort of a strategic imperative for this asset to get into production. So it's a couple of years away from first production in terms of timing. They've got all their state permits, and they actually had the federal permit issued. And then just the procedural process for permitting here in the U.S., there's one final chance to challenge the permit, which we expect to be cleared in Q3 this year. The asset's operated by a TSX-listed company called Lithium Americas, which is a multi-billion dollar market cap company. So I think underscores that, you know, although we're a junior company, a mining royalty company, we do get royalties over tier one assets operated by majors, which is an important point with regard to the quality of assets in the portfolio. I think the expectation is it receives finalization of its permit next quarter, and Lithium Americas has already raised $400 million in an equity raise towards kicking off construction of the asset, and they've got good access to capital. So effectively, once it gets that permit, it's going to kick straight into construction. And a quick overview of the asset, it's extremely large. The plan is for stage one production to produce 40,000 tons of lithium carbonate equivalent a year, and then stage two to do 80,000 tons a year. And it's got a planned 46-year mine life, and the resource is four times the size of the reserve, which underpins that mine life. So ample opportunity for them to expand production or extend the mine life. I'm fairly comfortable in saying that it'll likely be producing 100 years from now. It's just a monster deposit. The quick breakdown on economics is at that stage two production profile, when they reach steady state of 80,000 tons a year of lithium, at today's spot price, our royalty would be paying us about $60 million a year in revenue. So it's a very significant number. Now, lithium has gone on a run, as you noted. So, you know, I don't expect lithium to sort of stay where it's at, certainly not in perpetuity, but anecdotally, I think that gives you a flavor of the style of cash flow. We paid $28 million for the royalty. There's also a one-off payment that's expected when they commence construction of about $13.2 million, which is a partial buyback of the royalty. So it steps the royalty rate down. But the numbers I've been quoting you, the 60 plus million a year, that's predicated on assuming that the operator does exercise that buy down. It makes all sort of the sense in the world for them to do so, because it reduces it from a 8% royalty to a 1.75. So kind of a gun to the head type scenario where they'd be highly incentivized to buy it down. But then from there, the royalty stays over the project for the entirety of the life of mine. And so, yeah, our expectation is that this thing gets permitted this year, and the operator's still flagging first production in late 24 and then likely sort of really ramping up in 2025. And then from there, it's going to run for decades and be spitting out cash flow to us as the royalty holder.
A pretty compelling set of numbers there. You know, $60 million in revenue in the future for a company that's, you know, currently trading at a $200 million market cap. And you've obviously got, you know, 20 more projects there. Yeah, that's a pretty compelling figures there, Adam. So, you know, let's speak to, you know, the rest of the portfolio now in regards to, yes, you know, there's significant exposure there to lithium. You know, when you're looking, you know, across the rest of the portfolio and the, you know, the commodities that you have there and the exposure that you have there, I mean, how do you see that progressing? Is there going to be a focus on, you know, lithium and maybe other battery metals out there, or are you looking, you know, maybe at gold as well? Of course, there's gold in the portfolio at the moment, but in terms of sort of future investments and how you see the portfolio evolving over time, I mean, what's your sort of forecast and where that goes?
Yeah, so the only mining commodity we won't invest in is coal, but other than that, we'll invest in any future facing metal, or I suppose we're prioritizing future facing metals. So in particular, those metals that feed into the green revolution or whatever you want to call it, metals like lithium that are absolutely critical for batteries and energy storage. Yeah, so I think we'd be happy to see more copper into the portfolio. We do have copper exposure, including a paying copper royalty, but would like to see more in the portfolio. Would love to get some nickel, zinc, tin, all those commodities that are pretty vanilla sort of base metals, but have a battery metal angle to them, where you can't have this build out of the infrastructure required for that shift in energy storage without these metals, that they're irreplaceable. And it's that sort of exposure that our investors want us to get. So, and to be honest, it kind of goes back to the strategy with most of our peers focused on gold. You know, we opportunistically snag gold royalties when and where we can, but nobody's really focused on this forward facing metals. And so that's really the opportunity that we see in the space and where we can expect to continue to build out the portfolio.
So, Adam, you initially moved to the AIM more than a year ago now, actually, and raised $16 million at 20p. Looking at the share price now, we're currently trading around 50p. I remember from one of the recent presentations you gave at one of the UK Investor Magazine investor conferences. I just want to quickly touch on some of the incentives you have among the team in terms of where you need to get this share price to, in terms of, you know, certain levels for your personal benefit, because remembering back to that was particularly interesting. Should we be able to just speak to that quickly?
Yeah, sure. It's a critical thing, I think, for investors, obviously, to ensure that management's incentivized in the same way that shareholders are incentivized. So we're, by and large, everybody's equity focused. That's where we really see our incentive, and in particular, the bulk of our options are priced at. The exercise price is 50p, so about where we sit today. But for the options to vest, they vest in equal tranches from 80p to a pound 20. So we've got to get the share price to those price targets and then hold it there for a year for each target to vest. So for the first tranche to vest, we got to get it to 80p and hold it there on a volume weighted average for a year. And then that tranche of options vest, and then so on and so forth up to a pound 20. So yeah, I think it's a pretty clear indicator of where we expect to see this thing going. We're pretty early days. You know, we're just over a year and a half old. As you said, have run the share price from 20p up to 50p, and and most importantly, volume and liquidity is increased substantially. So people can get into the stock in size and get out, and the liquidity is there to support that. But obviously we're not in this to sort of stop at 50p. The objectives are very clear, I think. So yeah, we thought that was worthwhile making everybody aware of.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that certainly stuck with me, Adam, when I heard that. So just to finish off now, people listening to this, you know, as I mentioned previously, do check out the notes. Go and have a look at the Trident Royalty website to get a flavour for the portfolio that we've just discussed. But Adam, you know, for current holders and people maybe looking at the stock, what can they expect from Trident Royalties going forward in 2022?
I think a few things. I mean, we've now built up a portfolio that's got reasonably substantial revenue. So I think we've, you know, speaking to Thacker Pass and some of those assets that are coming down the track, that's where you see some real chunky numbers. And to be honest, that's where a lot of the excitement is. That said, our revenue from our currently producing assets this year, I think people may be surprised how quickly we've built a pretty solid foundation of revenue, which supports debt service, supports the ability to go out there and buy new royalties. So I think that's something for people to keep an eye on. Clearly, we've done, you know, over 10 transactions since being listed, sort of averaging a transaction every other month. I suspect that pace will slow a bit as the transactions are getting larger, as we get larger. But that said, obviously, we expect to do more transactions this year. So another thing to keep an eye on. And then the final thing I'd say is the portfolio in general. As you said, people should go to the website and poke around. We've got quite a bit of information there. And I touched on Thacker Pass expected to receive its final permit approval in Q3. It's events like that can then drive the re-rating of the share price, because you know, people are very enthused by what we've got in Thacker Pass. If they're not entirely comfortable that the permit will be cleared, or if it's, you know, not their area of expertise, all of these we diligence it in detail. But if investors just aren't sure, they may be holding back. And so what we tend to see is when events like that occur, it's a catalyst for the share price to move up as the portfolio gets de-risked. So I think between our current cash flow, new future deals, and then events within the existing portfolio, I think quite a bit to look forward to.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you for a truly fascinating insight there into Trident Royalties. So just a quick note before we go, and Adam's mentioned, or I've mentioned, do check out the notes to this podcast. There'll be more information there about Trident, as well as a link through to the website. Do go and check out the list of projects there to give you an idea of the strength of the portfolio. So, Adam, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Yep, thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.